Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Burnout by T. O'Fallon, narrated by Samantha Prescott. Chapter 1. 10 more minutes and all freaking hell would break loose. Cassie wanted to growl as she braced her palms on the bar where she served as bartender in this crap hole, the worst undercover assignment she'd ever had. She scanned the 20 rickety wooden tables surrounding the raised stage in La Femme. Every walk of life in Manhattan was accounted for, from blue-collar workers in jeans and t-shirts to businessmen sporting $1,000 Armani suits. Sick bastards. They were all here for the underage girls. She hoped the perverted a-holes went down in flames. Half a dozen drugged-out teenagers gyrated their scantily clad bodies from center stage, swaying and undulating to the rhythm of music pumping from overhead speakers. The bass boomed full throttle. Glasses on the bar vibrated. Bottles of cheap booze crammed onto rusty metal shelves hummed their own crystalline tune. Cassie walked a few feet down the narrow aisle behind the bar, her black pumps making sucking noises on the wet, sticky tile. She wasn't thrilled about wearing the working attire that hugged her so tightly she could hardly breathe. Her clothes barely concealed the body wire microphone nestled between her breasts and the tiny digital recorder taped to the inside of her thigh. Another glance at her watch. 6 minutes to go. She took a steadying breath, then grabbed a tray and went around the bar to gather empty glasses and bottles from the tables. Normally it was the waitress's job to collect empties, but the less glass out there during a takedown, the better. After filling her tray, she turned and slammed head first into something solid. Glasses and bottles rattled on the tray, nearly sliding to the floor. The customer she'd plowed into gripped her upper arm, steadying her. "Sorry about that." She looked up and smiled at the face looming above her. "Thank..." Her smile froze. "You." She recognized him immediately. It was the bearded man she'd seen come in earlier, the one who'd made La Femme's scumbag owner, Rod Mancini, visibly nervous. The guy had gone directly into the back rooms, rooms reserved for private sessions. Apparently, he was finished doing whatever perverted things he'd come here for. After years on the job, Cassie automatically took inventory. 5'10", 175 pounds, dressed casually but neatly in black slacks and a black sweater. His beard didn't quite match the color of his dark brown hair. She'd bet her ass it was a fake beard. No shock there. Lots of men wouldn't want to be recognized in a dump like this. "You're welcome," he said, still gripping her arms. His voice was smooth, practiced, like a radio talk show host's. The smile he gave her was pleasant enough, yet it never reached his eyes. His eyes were an intensely bright gray, striking, even, yet something about the man was definitely off. Was it that subtle air of superiority she detected? The way he carried himself, one would think he owned the place. No, that wasn't it. That's when Cassie saw it, a vicious, cruel light flickering in those gray depths. Just as quickly, it was gone, slick facade back in place. As if he'd suddenly realized he'd unintentionally exposed his inner demon. He released her arms and turned, disappearing out the front door and leaving the scent of expensive cologne in his wake. Cassie watched the door slam behind him, her skin still crawling from where he'd touched her. It was more her woman's intuition talking than cop instinct, yet she was certain of one thing— that man was pure evil. Too bad he wouldn't be here for the takedown. She'd definitely like to see him in cuffs. That would have knocked the air of superiority straight out of him. For the remaining few seconds of her illustrious bartending career, Cassie checked her customers' drinks for the last time. Sweat ran from her neck into the valley between her breasts. Any moment now, and... shouting from the front door... Cassie snapped her head up. Her heart pounded. She dropped the cloth she'd been gripping and balled her hands. A surge of triumph and relief coursed through her veins. "Thank you, Lieutenant Fry. Right on time." "Police! Hands in the air!" NYPD SWAT stormed the bar, shotguns raised. Patrons' screams and shouts pierced the air. Chairs toppled to the floor. Waitresses dropped their trays. Glasses crashed. The girls on stage shrieked and jumped to the floor as quickly as their 4-inch spiked heels allowed and ran into the back rooms. An entire precinct of uniformed cops poured in behind the SWAT team.
"Against the wall, now!"
6 officers, garbed in raid gear, surrounded the tables.
"Put your hands in the air and walk to the wall,"
one cop shouted over the blaring music. Men seated at the tables rushed to comply with the commands. Some stumbled from fear and shock, others because they were drunk off their asses. One burst into tears. Another fainted and crumpled to the floor. As one burly officer hauled the guy to his feet by his lapels, Cassie noticed another man wearing tan slacks that were now dark at his crotch while he trickled urine onto the floor. She watched customers for sudden movements. Anyone could be carrying a concealed weapon. Innocent girls could be shot. Police weren't bulletproof, and neither was she. It was all Cassie could do not to throw herself out there into the mix, but she had to maintain her covert identity for as long as possible. That was the cardinal rule of undercover work, one that had been drilled into her head again and again. Keep your identity secret at all costs. Policewomen brought in blankets to cover the girls before escorting them out the front door and into an unmarked police van. The look of fear on their young faces made Cassie want to scream. Or cry. Half the uniforms patted down customers and the 2 bouncers for weapons, while the other cops ordered those seated on the bar stools to put their hands in the air. Cassie stayed behind the bar but held her hands above her head. She plastered a shocked, frightened look on her face for the benefit of anyone watching.
"Turn off that damn music!" someone yelled.
A moment later, the music cut out, to be replaced by more shouts and screams coming from the back rooms. Detectives dragged Rod Mancini out in cuffs. Cassie wanted to applaud, but the sight of more barely dressed girls being helped outside by policewomen sobered her in a hurry. These girls, she reminded herself, were why she'd stuck it out doing an undercover gig she hated and working a job she no longer cared for.
"You too, honey."
A tall, good-looking, blonde detective came toward her.
"I'm sure you know the drill. Against the bar and spread 'em."
Cassie complied, but gave the detective a pissed-off sneer to make it look good. This was the part that annoyed her. Large hands patted her down, seemingly for weapons.
"Nice ass,"
her partner and good friend, Detective First Class Dominic Carew, whispered in her ear.
"Fuck off, cop," she snapped loud enough for Mancini to hear before he was dragged out the exit door to a police van. "You wish,"
Dom snickered as he cuffed her hands behind her back. Dom had been her partner for nearly 3 years, and while she knew he was only joking, she was sick and tired of men making cracks about her ass. She adored Dom, but even he had his immature moments when he reverted to officer obnoxious. After the stress of tonight, it was the last thing she needed.
"Let's go."
He grabbed her arm, and she shot him a nasty look. He took her outside to a black Crown Vic and put her in the back seat. When he'd gotten behind the wheel, he turned to look at her through the prisoner cage.
"You okay, Cass?"
"Except for your crack about my ass? Yeah, I'm fine." She blew out a breath, and her muscles began to relax for the first time in half a year. "This is one job I won't mind being fired from." Dom nodded and winked before turning the ignition. As he steered the car into traffic, Cassie scanned the sidewalks, searching for the bearded man she'd bumped into inside La Femme. His image stayed with her, as did those creepy gray eyes. Cassie could swear she'd seen the guy once before, maybe 6 months ago, shortly after she'd started working at La Femme. While she hadn't gotten as good a look at him that time, even then there'd been something about the man she'd remembered. Dom guided the Crown Vic south on Broadway toward the precinct, expertly maneuvering the large sedan through heavy traffic. The neon lights of Times Square beamed out over the crowded streets and sidewalks. As Times Square slipped past the car window, it reminded Cassie of her life sliding away while she worked one undercover case after another.
unless she did something about it. Like leave the NYPD. Live free of this sick and depraved underground world. Reintegrate with the better part of humanity. The idea of actually laughing again held significant merit. Joking around was engraved in her genetics, but Cassie couldn't recall the last time she'd played a prank on Dom or one of her brothers. There hadn't been an iota of humor in her darkened world in years, since becoming a deep cover cop. Caving to the pressure of her family's law enforcement tradition and following her older brothers through the police academy might not have been the smartest move. She was 34 years old. Was it too late to make a change? Maybe she ought to put that culinary degree of hers to good use. Yes. The question was, do I have the balls to do it? Pounding at the front door jerked Cassie fully awake from where she'd been asleep on the couch. An automatic glance at the digital clock on her DVD player told her it was 2 a.m. Raven, her Belgian sheepdog and former canine, leaped to the floor and took up a protective stance. Her sharp barks sliced the air like a butcher knife. Cassie jumped from the sofa and bolted to her Smith & Wesson on the hall table. Blood pounded at her temples. Her heart beat so fast she could practically hear it. She yanked the gun from its holster and took cover behind the stairway wall. Raven continued to bark and paw at the door. Shit. Bastards from La Femme had tracked her down. She'd only left the place a few hours ago. Assholes didn't waste any time. Cassie clenched her jaw and aimed her weapon at the door, being careful not to point it at Raven.
Cass, it's Dom and Gray,
a voice called from the other side of the door. Her breath came out in a loud whoosh, and she nearly slid to the floor in relief. She'd recognize her partner's deep voice anywhere. Jesus Christ, she said, exhaling. Just jitters, Yates. Calm down. This happens to any cop undercover for so long. Post-undercover paranoia, they call it. I am so getting out of this shit. She leaned against the wall, waiting for her heart to resume a more normal rhythm.
Damn it, Cassie, open up!
Her oldest brother, Gray, yelled. Raven stood on her hind legs and pawed at the door, still barking her furry head off.
Okay, okay!
Cassie shouted loud enough for Gray and Dom to hear, then shoved her gun back into the holster and set it on the table. It's all right, girl. She nudged Raven aside with her knee. As she twisted the deadbolt open, Raven's fierce barks eased to a throaty rumble. The dog wasn't crazy about most men, but she'd learned to tolerate Gray and Dom. Cassie opened the door to 2 very large, stern-faced men. The skin at the base of her neck began to tingle. Not a good sign when 2 NYPD detectives showed up at your house at 2 a.m. after a major bust, both wearing their work faces. What Gray said next confirmed her gut reaction.
Cass, there's a hit on you.
Chapter 2. Cassie pulled off the New York State Thruway and drove into the town of Hopewell Springs, population 6,000, according to the prominent hand-painted sign on the side of the road. She and Raven had been driving for over 4 hours, and Cassie's stomach rumbled so loud she could hear it above the music blasting on the radio. She glanced over her shoulder. I don't know about you, Raven, but I'm starving. Let's hope we can find a decent place for breakfast out here in the boonies.
Woof.
Dom and Gray had stood guard overnight at her house in Union, New Jersey, while she slept, so she could rise early and hit the road at the crack of dawn. With her Smith & Wesson, 2 additional fully loaded magazines, and Raven at the foot of her bed, she'd fallen into a troubled, restless sleep, dreaming of a nameless, faceless hitman. Her brother and partner had wanted her to go to a safe house until they could figure out the identity of the hitman and throw his ass in jail. Word on the street was whoever ordered the hit was connected with La Femme, but Rod Mancini wasn't talking, at least not directly. The little prick had lawyered up, and his high-priced, arrogant attorney now did the talking for him, naturally denying his client's involvement in any alleged hit. No matter what Gray and Dom say, I don't want protection. She glanced in the rearview mirror and saw Raven's head perk up. I can't be guarded by a bunch of cops 24/7. It would be like prison. And getting away from cops, from the NYPD altogether, was the plan that had been cooking in her head for a while now. The only cop I want guarding my backside is you.
Woof.
Cassie turned onto what appeared to be the main drag leading into the center of Hopewell Springs. She eyed the envelope thick with cash and other documents sitting on the front seat. Gray had reluctantly agreed to help and procured an unmarked NYPD navy blue trailblazer registered in her old undercover name, different from the one she'd used on the LaFemme case. Now she was Cassie Younger. Dom had even scrounged up her matching fictitious driver's license, credit card, and a cell phone, all of which she'd used previously for an undercover burglary gig and a drug bust. Utilizing old undercover ID from a successful bust that had resulted in press coverage was a no-no in the UC world, and had come back to bite many a careless cop. But given the exigent circumstances, it would have to suffice. Besides, she didn't anticipate needing this particular persona for very long. Behind her, Raven lounged on the seat. Piled high in the rear of the trailblazer were two travel bags she'd crammed with her summer clothes and other essentials, along with a 40-pound bag of pricey kibble, bones, and a dog brush. She focused her attention back on the road and finding a place to grab a bite. Not much chance there'd be haute cuisine in such a tiny burg, but driving through Hopewell Springs actually made her smile, stretching muscles she could barely remember using in the last 5 years. The town looked like something out of a Norman Rockwell painting, complete with an old-fashioned theater, an ice cream parlor, and other small cutesy shops. Another hand-painted sign indicated the towering brick building with fluted columns she'd just passed housed the town's municipal offices and police station. The tree-lined streets were decorated gaily with red, white, and blue banners for the July 4th holiday 2 weeks away. A large black-and-white striped awning on the main thoroughfare caught her eye, and she slowed to see it was a restaurant. When she got close enough to read the sign, she burst out laughing. Raven barked as if she too could read the sign. The Raven's Nest. Well, what do you know? She pulled into an empty parking spot in front of the restaurant. Turning to Raven, she said, "With that name, we've got to check this place out." After lowering the windows to allow fresh air into the SUV for Raven, Cassie shut off the engine and threw the keychain with its bulky remote start gizmo into her handbag. She grabbed her gun and extra magazines and shoved them on top of her detective shield inside the bag. Before leaving the vehicle, she looked through the rear window, then each way along the street. No one was watching or waiting for her, at least not that she could see. To Raven, she ordered, "Stay. Guard." After getting out of the trailblazer, she smoothed a few wrinkles from her jeans and cream-colored camisole, then headed to the restaurant, her sandals clip-clopping on the pavement. A cool, welcome breeze whipped her hair in front of her face. She tucked it behind her ears and glanced back to see wind ruffling Raven's fur as the dog stuck her head out the open window. No need to worry about anyone stealing something in the trailblazer, not with a seriously intense former canine standing watch. The striped awning of the quaint cafe shielded a bank of large windows, giving the place a French bistro-type flair. When she pulled open the front door, a small brass bell jingled overhead. No sooner had the door shut behind her than the warmth and hospitality of the place became obvious. The floors were a classic black-and-white vinyl checkerboard design, with matching gingham curtains hanging at the windows. Bright red cloths adorned the round tables and the rectangular booths. Cassie estimated the restaurant could accommodate about 75 people at maximum occupancy. Kitchen bells dinged and dishes clattered. The smell of bacon and fried eggs made Cassie's mouth water. Waitresses in black uniforms balanced enormous circular trays loaded with food and still managed to fill customers' coffee cups at the same time. An antique brass cash register rang every time the cash drawer opened. The place was in the midst of breakfast chaos, and she loved it. This was exactly the kind of restaurant she had once imagined opening. That was when her dream of being a chef had been alive and well. Cassie made her way to the counter and sat at a bar stool. Her seat gave her an unobstructed view into the kitchen, and she realized that had been the design plan, to make the kitchen staff part of the entertainment. She could see through the opening to the commercial ovens and grills where three chefs in white uniforms clanged spatulas, flipped eggs and flapjacks, and scooped up steaming piles of hash browns. The kinetic energy of the place seeped into her veins, awakening a yearning she'd long ago ditched for the allure of a shiny gold badge. She sighed. This could have been my life, the one I really wanted. If only she hadn't caved to family tradition and become a cop. First her grandfather, then her father, all three of her brothers, then her. Dad had been so proud when she'd received her detective shield. The whole family had turned out for the ceremony. Cassie swiveled on the stool, allowing her to take in more of the restaurant's interior. The walls were a rich golden color and looked like aged Venetian plaster. Tasteful paintings of foreign places added to the European bistro atmosphere. The only modern accessory on the walls was a large television mounted high over the serving counter. Local morning news blared out over the din from the kitchen. Something slapping loudly behind her made Cassie spin. A slim woman in her early 40s, about 5'3", and buzzing with energy, stood on the other side of the counter. Sitting on the surface in front of her was a large laminated menu. "Coffee?" the waitress asked in a friendly tone. The woman, whose tag indicated her name was Rose, had stylishly coiffed short, spiky brown hair in an Upper East Side kind of way. Her mascara, eyeliner, and red lipstick were flawlessly applied. She wore a pale green skirt and matching green silk short-sleeved blouse. A thick gold necklace, bracelet, and button earrings completed the ensemble. Not your typical small-town waitress getup. Hostess, maybe? "Please," Cassie returned Rose's smile.
"Make that two,"
a deep masculine voice said from close behind her, a voice that sent pleasant chills racing up her spine.
"I'll take mine to go."
"Hey, Mike," Rose said as she turned to pour two cups of coffee, one into a white mug and one into a paper cup. "Dressed kind of casual this morning, aren't you?" Cassie swiveled her stool enough to check out the body from which that incredible voice had come. Oh, man. She did a double take. The guy was hot. And so close, not 3 inches from her shoulder. Mike, as Rose called him, was about 6'3", with thick, dark brown hair that curled adorably around his ears. He had the clearest deep blue eyes she'd ever seen, making her feel as if she were peering into the translucent waters of the Caribbean. Faded jeans hugged a pair of long, muscular legs, while a not-too-snug black t-shirt clung to a broad, sculpted chest. She could well imagine running her fingers through Mike's wavy brown locks, something she'd never been able to do with any cop she dated. Most of them cut their hair so short they might as well have been bald.
"Got to head to Albany for training," Mike said to Rose. "Call Jimmy if you need anything. He'll be more than happy to oblige."
Cassie finished admiring Mike's body, right up to his ruggedly handsome jawline, covered by a light growth of beard. The only thing marring his tanned face was a scar above his left eye. Nah, marring wasn't the right word. It made him look sexier, and a little dangerous. When she lowered her gaze, she was pinned by a pair of twinkling eyes. Ah, jeez, caught staring. Smooth, Yates, real smooth.
"Hi," Mike said.
The cafe was still as noisy as when Cassie first walked in, but for some odd reason she barely noticed it. The only thing she heard was that deep, melting voice directed straight at her. "Hi," she managed to mumble.
"Here you both go,"
she heard Rose say, but the woman's voice sounded far, far away. All Cassie's senses kicked into overdrive, but her brain stopped performing with its usual crisp, detective-like efficiency. Heat emanating from the man was like a warm caress on her body, and that scent he wore, it reminded her of Old Spice, only more subtle, more sophisticated. That aftershave did wonders for a guy, not to mention it was a surefire way to get her hormones revved into high gear. If they hadn't been landlocked, Cassie would have bet this guy really did have a girl in every port. She could practically hear the Old Spice jingle in her head.
"Thanks, Rose," Mike said, without taking his gaze from Cassie.
At first, his expression was inquisitive, almost suspicious. As he narrowed his eyes, dark brows drew together. For an instant, she had the impression he was sizing her up, and not in a physical way. She could practically see the gears turning in his head. Her brother Gray got the same way when he was trying to figure out whether a suspect was handing him a line of shit.
"Well, what the heck is this about? I stopped in for coffee and chow, not to rob the joint."
A slow, easy grin tipped the corners of Mike's mouth, stopping just short of a full-fledged smile. Then again, maybe he was just ogling, since from where he stood he had a bird's-eye view straight down her camisole to her braless breasts.
"Staying in town or passing through?" he asked.
She could barely form a coherent sentence. Something about this total stranger took her breath, and her speaking faculties away.
"Passing through."
Mike's full, sexy mouth curved upward, revealing a gorgeous set of white teeth.
"Shame."
Yeah, she muttered. Crap. She'd never been at a loss for words. Bullshit was her forte, something honed to professional undercover perfection.
"Sugar? Milk?"
She turned as Rose plunked a jar of sugar and a spoon onto the counter, along with a small silver pitcher of milk.
"Oh, yes. Thank you."
"My pleasure." Rose winked at her, then looked to Mike with raised eyebrows.
"Hair's getting a little long, isn't it, Mike?"
When he didn't answer, Cassie was afraid to look at him to see if those intense blue eyes were still focused on her. The cafe was air-conditioned, but her neck and chest felt hot, and sweat began to drip between her shoulder blades. "Get over it. He's just a hot guy, and I'll never see him again."
"Mike," Rose repeated. "I'll get it cut when I come back. Wouldn't want the town to think I was getting sloppy. Gotta go. See you in a week."
"Have a good trip," Rose said.
"Thanks,"
he answered as he reached for the paper cup and dropped money onto the counter.
"Morning, Mike," one of the waitresses called out.
"Morning, Ginny," he answered.
"See you when you get back,"
one of the customers yelled from the far end of the counter. Mike waved to the customer and turned to Cassie.
"Any chance you'll be passing through again in a couple of weeks? This town throws one hell of a July 4th party."
Now, what kind of party would be worth driving all the way back here for? She crossed her arms over her chest.
"Depends."
He gave her a look that melted her insides like a grilled cheese sandwich.
"Where did you say you were from?"
"Didn't." She pressed her lips together, partly to keep from blurting out something about herself that she shouldn't, but mostly to keep from grinning like an idiot. One itty-bitty minute, and this guy had every nerve ending in her body tingling louder than a chorus of Christmas bells. She couldn't stop the little grin curving her lips.
"You should try to make it."
Mike lowered his voice. His eyes sparkled with a hint of mischief.
"I guarantee you won't be disappointed."
"Is that an invitation?"
"Do you want it to be?"
"Hell yeah." "Sounds intriguing," she answered in a wistful tone that she heard as much as felt, and for a moment, New York City and the NYPD suddenly seemed very, very far away. In another life. "Unfortunately, I don't think I'll ever be back here." A flicker of something passed across Mike's face. Was it disappointment?
"Well then, nice to meet you,"
he said with a wink that made her heart go gagong. Mike shot her one last devastating look before turning away. She watched his perfectly formed butt as it disappeared through the door. Mike was gone, but his presence and the effect he had on her lingered. Her libido might as well be groaning. When she turned back to the counter, Rose fixed her with laughing hazel eyes.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?